slight rearrangement. We're going to take our first case last. So are you the lawyers for Energy Plus?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Mr. Dunham? Thanks.
May it please the court, my name is Daryl Dunham, and I represent Energy Plus Consulting, EPC, in the briefs and in the record below. We are appealing entry of a summary judgment against our client, which in essence we were asking to have a clause in the contract for the payment of $720,000 in force. Briefly, the facts are, in the spring of 2001, Energy Plus, EPC, became aware of the fact that Washington County, Illinois, downstate Illinois, had been deeded about 38,000 acres of underground mining reserves, in excess of 200 million tons of proven reserves, which is a substantial amount of coal in southern Illinois. If you
probably be a substantial amount of coal in northern Illinois too, but there you are.
Thank you, Your Honor. if you can mine 3 million tons a year, you can see that this would be a 75-year mine. So we're talking about a substantial project, I think, by anybody's imagination.
And in your brief, you argue that time was of the essence. Doesn't your constant willingness to offer extensions of the deadline in exchange for the $50,000 undermine that argument?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor, but
Why not?
Well, throughout, and of course, we're here on summary judgment, and we have to take Mr. Lindsay's affidavit as true. And he says several times that we never would have entered into the contract in the first place if had we known that that Fuels was not going to eventually enter into a deal with us, or that they weren't acting in good faith. The whole purpose of the deal was, as long as we felt that there was a substantial possibility that they were going to enter into the transaction, enter into the mining lease, we were willing to give them every opportunity. In fact, Mr. Lindsay in his affidavit specifically says that. He says that we're not trying to force feed a forfeiture or a deal on Fuels. We were willing to work with them as long as we had reason to believe that they were working with us. And everything that we had from Fuels was positive. The reserves that we understood them to be in August of 2001, as it turned out after they were doing their due diligence, they were drilling their test holes, they found that the reserves were substantially greater than that. Everything we got from Fuels was a green light. And as Mr. Lindsay testified in his deposition, it came as quite a surprise or as a shock to him.
I don't know how that bears on the question what the cost to you of a four-day delay is.
Your Honor, as we basically concede in our brief, if we're going to look at the, if this is a penalty case, we don't believe that it is.
Well, of course it is. But the $720,000 is completely disproportionate to any. As Judge Williams pointed out, I mean, your actual sense of the cost of these extensions is based on the $50,000 and the $100,000. You thought these, you were quite willing to grant extensions. But I don't see how $720,000 can represent a reasonable estimate of the cost to you of a four-day delay.
If we're going to look at it, Your Honor, as simply a four-day delay, it is not.
Well, what is it besides a four-day delay?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that Illinois law requires this court, as does the Illinois courts, to look at the transaction as of August 13, 2001. At that point in time, energy costs were very high. In California, they were having blackouts. It was predicted that we're going to be blackouts even in the Midwest. And this looked like it was going to be a good deal. Mr. Lindsay...
Look, in the ordinary, liquidated damages for delay are very common, but the usual way they're done is it's a per-day thing. $5,000 a day, $10,000 a day, and that way the damages are proportioned to the inconvenience caused by the victim of delay. So why didn't you do it that way? But to have the same penalty, $720,000 for one day's delay and for a year's delay, what sense does that make?
Your Honor, If that is the focus, if we're going to focus on the consequences from December 31st to January 4th or January 10th, if you will, then...
The whole purpose of a liquidated damages is to make an advance estimate of the likely consequences to the victim of the breach, in this case, of a delay. And the way you do that, you proportion the damages to the length of the delay. Otherwise, it's completely cockeyed. $720,000 if they miss the deadline by 5 minutes, $720,000 if they miss it by a year. What is the sense of that?
Your Honor, the way we choose to look at the case, and we believe that the Illinois courts would look at it, is more like this, if I would be permitted to make an analogy. We wouldn't be here if an agreement was signed on December 31st whereby they signed the contract and agreed to pay $720,000 and then 4 days later said, we changed our mind, and would argue at that point, well, what's the consequences to you of a four-day delay? There's been no cost to you. We see the case as simply this. They entered into a contract in August of 2001, and we said, you have until December 31st, 2001 to change your mind. But if you don't change your mind by December 31st, 2001, then you've entered into that contract and you have to suffer the consequences.
Why couldn't any penalty clause be conceptualized in just that fashion?
Your Honor,
I agree, if I don't sign a contract with you, I forfeit my left pinky finger, right?
Well, that wouldn't be enforceable as a matter of public policy, and there are certain clauses in contract where the damages as a result.
But monetary penalties are unenforceable in contracts, and I don't see why your reasoning wouldn't completely eliminate the principle that penalties are not enforceable.
Because, Your Honor, I don't believe, and we argued this with great vigor in our brief, that this should be analyzed as a penalty case at all. For example, in the issue of options, if you're a day late ordinarily in exercising an option, just 1 day late, 2 days late, that's too bad for you.
Well, you lose the benefit. You don't pay a fine to the person who issued the option.
And we don't believe, Your Honor, that there was any fine.
Well, they had to dig into their pockets for $720,000.
Your Honor, they agreed in August of 2000.
Yes, but everyone agrees to a penalty clause. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any issue of enforceability.
Your Honor, their agreement was that this deal was worth $720,000 a year for 5 years.
But not for 4 days.
Well, but that's what we have agreed to.
That's the penalty. If they don't sign the contract or surrender their option, they have to dig into their pocket for $720,000.
It's not like, Your Honor, they are without an economic benefit.
$180,000 a day, that's the penalty.
Your Honor, if you look at what they have on January 4th, whether they pay us the $720,000 or not, they have a right in February of 2001 to go ahead and exercise the option with the county, and they have now control of an excess of 200 million tons of coal reserves that they previously agreed in August was worth to us, just as the brokers, only as the brokers, $720,000 a year. This is not one of those cases where...
Yeah, a year, not a 4 day.
Well, Your Honor, if I don't see, if I look at in terms of the cases, whether it's an option where you forfeit your right to exercise an option or you forfeit your right to continue a contract, the law...
Forfeitures and penalties are not treated symmetrically.
I had no response if the court views the situation. And if we're going to analyze this breach as of this penalty clause, or alleged penalty clause, as of December 31st, 2001.
So what's your best case characterizing it the way you want it characterized, that is, as a non-penalty? What's your best Illinois case?
Here's
similar in terms of these facts, because I know you keep talking about Illinois cases, and maybe I missed it in the breach, mm-hmm. but I didn't see a case that was close to this situation that you cited.
Your Honor, the case that I think is most similar to the situation here is the this court's case in the scavenger case that we discussed at some length in our brief.
But that had some distinguishing facts there.
But the key point, Your Honor, in scavenger, and then as this court subsequently reaffirmed, is when we look at penalties, do we analyze the consequences, the damages, at the time of contracting, or do we analyze it at the time of the breach?
If time of contracting is fine, but I don't see how time of contracting, $720,000 would seem a reasonable estimate for a one-minute delay.
It's not a reasonable estimate for a one-minute delay, Your Honor, but if we could look at it the other way, what happened, of course, with the benefit of perfect hindsight, 9/11 happened, energy costs plummeted, and as Mr. Lindsay pointed out in his deposition when he pitched this deal to the county, we had a very narrow window of opportunity. These are people that are knowledgeable about the coal industry, and prices go up, and prices go down, and prices have peaked. And we had a very narrow window of opportunity. Now, I don't think we would be here if 9/11 hadn't occurred, and there was some other event that occurred and caused the energy prices to continue to go up. They would have exercised their option, and we would have received our broker's fee. So what they were permitted to do, Your Honor, was hedge against our contract, whether energy prices were going to go down. And that's exactly what happened. Now, nobody knew that was going to be the situation in August of 2001. And so in exchange for that, giving them the right to do their due diligence, to make up their mind later, we were insisting that they do so in a timely manner, which they did not do. And what we have found is in these option contracts, or these reverse option contracts, where it is in essence an option contract, then time is, by definition, is of the essence, and you are not permitted that one-day, two-day delay. In any option contract, you can be exercising the option 2 or 3 days late, and there are no economic consequences, or very little economic consequences, to the promisee. But looked at from the beginning, you have to look at the transaction from the beginning. Energy prices have now started to go back up. We haven't been able to find, Your Honor, another contract miner since January of 2002. We, by this definition, by that analysis, even though they are, 2.5 years late, they could have waited 2.5 years and given us notice and said, well, we're not going to do this deal. We haven't suffered any damages. Why? Because the market changed. And they shouldn't be allowed to speculate at our expense. And that's essentially the position we're taking. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dunham. Mr. Snemis?
Yes, sir. May it please the Court, my name is Don Snemis with Ice Miller in Indianapolis, and I represent the Appalachians today, Illinois Fuel and Appalachian Fuels. Your Honors, we are here having raised 4 issues in our brief below. The most compelling argument, I believe, is the one that Judge Herndon focused on, which was the penalty issue, and is the one my comments will be focused on, barring other directions that this Court would like to take me. It's important to keep in mind, Your Honors, that we are looking at 2 contracts here that Fuels entered into. One is a contract with EPC, and one is the actual option contract, which was with Washington County. The contract with EPC is the only one at issue here. It is the one that contains the penalty clause. And it provides, as Your Honors have referenced, that if we don't release the other contract, the option, by a date certain, we were required to pay this penalty, or what we would argue is a penalty, to EPC. The original date was November 11th. November 11th came, November 11th went. On November 14th, 3 days later, the party decided, let's extend it a little bit. And having already paid them $100,000 for the privilege of doing business with the county, we were asked to pay another $50,000 to extend what was by then a past deadline to December 31st. Within that amendment, as Your Honor correctly pointed out, was a provision that we could again extend that deadline from December 31st to February, I believe, 13th for a payment of an additional $50,000. So there is a sense in the record, clearly, that time was not of the essence and that the parties were, for a fee, willing to move these deadlines around, even having already been missed. Now, we have to keep in mind what the breach is here. The breach is not our decision not to exercise the option. We had until February 14th to do that. We did it over almost a month and a half earlier than that, and it was properly decided within the time frames that we would not exercise the option. There is no allegation that we breached the option. The county is not even a party in this case. The breach alleged is our failure to release the option by December 31st. Now, again, I must point out that this agreement with EPC does not say that we are required to give notice to EPC. It does nothing in either the agreement with EPC or the option requires us to give notice to even the county. Rather, the agreement with EPC simply says you shall release the option by a date certain. That is the breach alleged here. Now, every member of this panel has served on a panel in a case fairly recently decided in this court within the last 10 or 20 years, which has reaffirmed Illinois law on this subject. There is some interesting academic debate out there as to whether penalties should or should not be enforced, but it is only academic debate at this point. Illinois courts, as recently as a year or two ago, have affirmed that penalties shall not be enforced and are void. So the question becomes, is this a penalty? It has all the hallmarks of a penalty, and indeed Illinois law tells us that in close cases you are to find that the contract clause is a penalty and not a liquidated damages clause. So why is it a penalty? Well, first of all, we have to look to the purpose that the clause serves or does not serve. Below, EPC, through Mr. Lindsay, took several different conflicting positions as to the nature of what this clause was. He first said in an affidavit, rather self-serving we would argue, that it was an estimate of damages. But as Your Honor pointed out, if we had given them notice on 11:59 p.m. on December 31st, and had released the option by then, we were clearly within all of our rights and not in breach of the contract. Had we waited 2 minutes and given them notice at 12:01 a.m. on January 1st, New Year's Day, under the analysis by counsel, we would owe $720,000, whether it was a minute late, a day late, a week late, a month late, or, as Your Honor said, a year late. In several of the cases reported by this court, including some written by members of this panel, that type of clause has been held without question to be a penalty because, as Your Honor pointed out, it isn't $5,000 a day, it isn't $100 a day, which would be, if written in that manner, something entirely different.
Why did you sign it? Why did you agree to it? I mean, your client is a sophisticated enterprise.
There is no evidence in the record as to my client's motivation for doing it. I'm sure they believe that the people who would be responsible for these sorts of things would have met the deadline and would have seen it. They didn't. We're not here arguing that we met the deadline in terms of our penalty argument. Now, we do have other arguments in this case.
Is there anything in the record about why the deadline was missed? Was it just a screw-up?
There is nothing in the record as to why the deadline was missed. I think it would be fair for Your Honors to imply that it was just a screw-up. We have no argument, in other words, that there was some exigent circumstance which forced us to be unable to miss the deadline.
So we must. No storm.
you know, New Year's holiday, I have no idea. I really don't. So the key is, and I think one of the things that Judge Herndon below focused on, was that there was no negotiations between the parties, and nothing was said during those negotiations as to what the purpose of that $720,000 was. Now, there is testimony in the record as to how that number was reached. And that number was reached because EPC took a look at the situation and said, well, we think that because drilling and testing has already been done, that's about a $3.7 million benefit that we don't have to, that Fuels doesn't have to incur that expense. It had already been done by someone else, not EPC, but it was already a matter of public record. So therefore, we think the value of this deal to us should be about $3.7 million. Let's take $100,000 up front, take the rest, divide it over 5 years, and that comes up to $720,000 a year. So that was the fee that they thought they would take, assuming the option was exercised. And they just sort of slapped that first payment of that fee on to this agreement as a penalty, we'd argue, for being late in releasing this option. And so that clearly, that's the testimony of Mr. Lindsay, that clearly is not what a liquidated damages clause is supposed to be. What you see in the cases in which liquidated damages clauses are upheld is some effort at the time of the negotiation of the contract, and we would agree that that should be viewed ex ante and not ex post, that there was some effort to calculate, hey, if there is a delay and they don't tell us until January 1st, how much are we really going to be inconvenienced by that? How much is it going to be if it's January 15th? How much is it going to be if it's February 14th? And they never tell us at all. There's no indication that. I think Judge Herndon focused extensively on that in his order, and I think properly so. The fact that the amendments themselves speak of an additional extension for a price of $50,000. Again, why would someone agree that you could extend a deadline for $50,000 and then come here and argue to the court that $720,000 is a reasonable estimate of their damages? It's not. Your Honor, there's a lot of other cases to be heard today. I know I haven't used up all my time, but that's really the gist of my comments. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Simmons. Mr. Dunham, how much time? 2 minutes?
I have 2 minutes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Let me make one point. If we change this deal just slightly and have Fuels pay us $820,000 on August 13th, with the proviso that if they opt out of the transaction on December 31st, on or before December 31st, under the analysis, I guess they would have a lawsuit against us for the $720,000. My point is this. They talk about the fee costs damages. $720,000 is what the parties bargained for as to their unlimited right to exploit and use these reserves for this period of time. It was especially crucial at this time because we know that energy prices were very high and were about to spike. What would be our damages, Your Honor, if there wasn't any $720,000 provision in there? And they had simply blown by the deadline. I would argue, Your Honor, that our damages are approximately $3.6 million, given the fact that we have not been able to find another miner to come in there. Compared to $3.6 million...
No, but you didn't lose any... You didn't have a customer during that four-day period that you lost because you didn't know about that, that they hadn't released the option.
But, Your Honor, what the record is clear about is that we had other customers that were interested in this deal, and then when we were in the stages of finalizing a deal with Fuels, we told those people that we had another deal, and we did not market these reserves during this critical time because we had an agreement with Fuels that we would not do that. That's what was lost, Your Honor. At the time when energy prices were high...
No, what was lost was what happened during those 4 days. That's the only thing you could have lost as a result of the delay. Something you could have done in those 4 days.
Your Honor,
there wasn't anything.
seems to me that choice that you had to make in terms of trying to find someone else, every time you renewed and gave them an extension, your company made that decision or your client made that choice and didn't go out there in the marketplace. And so, I mean, that was the time. I mean, each of these extensions go to that question. You understand what I'm trying to say.
Throughout the contracting period, we had every reason to believe that Fuels was serious and was proceeding in good faith. As soon as if we'd ever found out that they were not going to do this deal, we would have withdrawn from it. In fact, we have reason to believe now in the record that they weren't. They said one of the reasons they gave us for not doing the deal was a Peabody announcement. But the Peabody announcement was in October. Before the November 11th extension, there's every reason to believe that all they were doing was buying themselves for $50,000 a defense to a $720,000 lawsuit.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Donovan and Mr. Snemis. Next.